So, this is episode 3 now of Captain Says, and I'm sitting here with Rory Scovel, who is he's a comedian, actor, future director, so I've read.
Activist.
All those things.
Just anything that sounds cool.
So, that's hello to you, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me on.
You're on the third show, so that's great. Who knows if there'll be a fourth one.
I want to try to get in top 5, for sure.
You got a good chance of that.
Yeah. Now, if there isn't a fourth one, then that means I made the top 3 best shows.
You'll be on my final show? That's even better than being on the third
finale.
One. That's it.
I was one of the top 3 episodes. Perfect.
So, can I talk about Ground Floor?
Yeah.
Because I love that show. And I only just found out it was cancelled, like, a few days ago.
Yeah.
That was horrible.
It was...
not the show. The cancellation.
Yeah, no, it was pretty sad, because I really thought the show started to pick up some momentum in terms of, like, character development, and I think we as cast were starting to gel a little bit more, have a little bit more fun, and I think we were all kind of like, third season feels like we've really figured it out by then. Because also our seasons were only 10 episodes, so, you know, trying to figure out anything in 10 episodes at the beginning is kind of tough. And then, you know, the second season of 10 episodes, you kind of get to play around a little bit because now you have the confidence of the network kind of picking you up. So I think we're kind of in the mindset that if we got to a third season, it would really break open as a show. But we did not get that chance.
So how do you find out that a show is done or reviewed?
We found out
before it gets to the news?
Yeah, they kind of tell us. But, I mean, the like websites like Deadline Hollywood or, you know, the websites that are like that, I mean, they might find out pretty quickly. But, yeah, this one we found out at the end of January, right before pilot season started in February. Mm. So it was kind of good that they let us know at least then so that we could all start going out for other shows. Because I think most of the cast landed... roles on, I don't know if people say landed roles, but makes sense to me. They got good roles on other shows. It was good. But it was a cool experience for me because I haven't really acted on a show before. I've done like some commercials or maybe like a guest star thing, but to actually get to do a character on a show consistently, like a consistent job.
And
it was a fun one too. Like it wasn't like such a stretch outside of my own sense of humor of like how I like to play out jokes. So it was perfect for me to step into it.
So when they tell you it's cancelled, don't mean to harp on the
canceling. No, I'm totally fine.
Do you like take that in any personal way, or you just think that's business?
I think
it's got to feel like shit.
I guess it kind of does. It is the business.
Yeah.
I think I'm just. I guess it feels like shit in like a different way. It doesn't feel personal at all. It just feels like, well, that's the business. You know, if there was a new head of TBS. That's what we were on. It was TBS, and like a new guy, a head guy came in, and that's usually the case when a new person comes in. They get rid of the shows because they want to like bring in their own stuff. So if our ratings were through the roof, we probably would have gotten a third season.
But they were okay. That was the thing.
They were okay. I don't think it was anything
bad.
It wasn't bad, but it wasn't really enough to sort of justify giving us a third season, I guess. You don't take it personally. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to be doing anything in entertainment. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that stand-up comedy is my job, and then on top of it, I get to be on a TV show that, you know, pays great money, and you get that exposure,
stable,
and it helps, you know.
Stable income.
Exactly. So, and great income. So, that's the kind of thing you miss, because you're like, you know, when a big paycheck comes, every single human being loves seeing a big paycheck. So, yeah, not having that now kind of, sure, it's sad to miss it, but also the positive side is it makes you hungrier to work a little harder, to be more creative, and maybe push your own stuff out there so that you know, find that gig that is undeniably great and someone can't get rid of it because people want to see it, you know.
And the other show you were on is Undateable,
mm-hmm.
with Justin Bieber's favorite comedian.
That's
Did you
right.
see the roast?
Yeah.
Oh, they the killed me for that. That was great.
The Beebster.
But you're on two episodes of that so far?
Just on two episodes, I did one guest star in the first season and a guest star in this second season. And now that show actually has been picked up for a third season. However, all of the episodes will be live. So kind of an interesting gimmick, I guess. They just did a live episode that I'm sure they had a lot of fun doing. I'm sure it's a lot of pressure and doing a pre-recorded episode is a ton of work, so I can't imagine like the pressure of a live episode. So it's kind of interesting that they've now been picked up to do 13 episodes and they all have to be live. It's going to be a ton of work, but those guys are, everybody involved with that show is funny, and I think it's going to be very interesting. Because those guys in their element of, you know, in the live element, they're really fun to watch.
That seems like a weird thing to...
I think it's something that NBC's let's give you more
episodes, but they have to all be live. Yeah. Right? That's not a thing that happens that often.
Yeah, I think the last time it happened was on Rock, that show from forever ago. I feel like it was like in the 90s or something. They tried to do like live episodes. But I think it's interesting. I think NBC is kind of, you know, they're trying to figure stuff out and try new things. So I'm kind of excited by it. I like it. So, I mean, there's a chance that maybe they ask me to come back and play that character again on episode this third season live. I have no idea if they will.
You'll be fine in the live thing.
I would enjoy it. I mean, it would be kind of definitely a rush because it's nervous enough pre-recording it, and you're allowed to make mistakes in that scenario, and it's still nervous and kind of nerve-wracking to remember your lines and not be the guy that screws up a scene for everybody. So I can't imagine when it's live and there's no do-overs. Everyone sees it as it happens.
There'd be some pressure. No.
Yeah.
Oh, so... You do comedy,
mm-hmm.
and I read all the stuff.
All the stuff.
You listen to David Cross and all that.
Yeah.
And you're from South Carolina.
Yes.
I've been to South Carolina.
Where was?
Not many Australians have been to South Carolina, so that's my thing.
You're the only one.
I was in England, and I was on my way back to Australia, and. Prince, this is 2004, Prince announced he was doing a tour.
Oh.
And the only dates that sort of matched up went on my way back through the States. There was like Columbia and Raleigh. So I went to both.
Yeah.
Because it was like next night. And it was nice.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know, it was one of those places I didn't know a single thing about it. And like the plane was coming in and it's all so green. It's just green everywhere.
Yeah, North and South Carolina are pretty pretty beautiful states, I think. You know, you got the mountains, the foothills, the Smoky Mountains, kind of going through the eastern side. I guess you might not have seen that, though, being in Raleigh and Columbia.
But it's cool to go to a place where, you know, you have no, like, preconceived idea about what it is, and then you get there and you're like, whatever it is, it's a surprise.
Right,
it's like,
yeah.
Wow, it's all green, and I've got to say, the biggest surprise to me coming from Sydney, you've walked around.
Right, yeah.
There's not a lot of, like, African-American people. And then I got there, and there was, like, so many, and it was, like, a culture shock thing. And I'd been to L.A., I'd been to New York, but this was just, like, wow.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people there.
Yeah.
And that was just an interesting thing.
Yeah, melting pot in the United States. The melting pot of cultures. So I feel like it's more just, like, New York City.
No, there's lots of different things. So what made you come to Australia? Is this the first time you've been here?
This is my first time. Yeah. Okay. I love it. I've tried to come, but my buddy John Doerr, I don't know if you know him or seen him.
You did the thing on Conan with him.
Yep. So he came out and did the festival. I think he's come out again and done just the Comedy Store, just a weekend alone. And that was kind of, he had mentioned it, how much he loved it. So from that point on, it was kind of something I wanted to do. And, My friends where we're at right now, they've lived here for about 8 years or so. Mm-hmm. And, I've always wanted to, like, come out and see them. It's obviously very difficult to just go across the world to visit people. But it worked out this time, and to, on top of it, get to do the festival. It was kind of perfect. Like, great, I'll see some friends I haven't seen in a while, and also get to do some shows.
That
and
all works out.
And actually playing at the Comedy Store and... doing this festival, it's definitely something that's in my head now for like next year to be like, all right, well, how do I try to come back, do like Melbourne if possible, you know, do some road gigs and actually make a bigger trip out of it.
I don't know why, but the Melbourne Comedy Festival is bigger than the Sydney one.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Has it been going longer?
Probably.
Yeah.
But it just seems like there's so much more happening in Melbourne. Like most comedians, most people get to Sydney, but it seems for the comedy festival, just that Melbourne is just a bigger thing.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
If you come back, you've got to do the Melbourne one.
Yeah. No, I'd love to come back and try to do both if possible and make a, like I said, a bigger trip. Stay for a little while, more.
You'd be here like maybe a month.
Yeah, someone was telling me you could really put a lot together, like doing those two festivals and then also just trying to go out on the road and do the other cities. You could be out in Australia for quite a bit, which is interesting to me.
Like people, you know, Arj Barker?
Yeah.
He comes and stays here for months at a time.
Right, yeah, I've heard he's...
I think he's more famous here than he is in the States.
He's huge out here, isn't he? Yeah. That's right, I've heard that from somebody.
And yeah, you could, if you set it all up, you'd have to plan it all out. But because Melbourne Comedy Festival, I think 2 weeks, maybe three, I don't know.
Yeah.
Sydney's two, but there just seems to be like less going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, and they're one after the other. Like Melbourne's first, and then there's like a few days break, and then Sydney starts. So you could set it all up.
Yeah, it's perfect. I mean, traveling internationally to do it, it's definitely perfect for me.
So yeah. You did your own solo show at Comedy Store first.
Yeah,
I was there.
Nice. Yeah, it was fun. I really enjoyed it. Had a blast.
I like the thing that you did at the start about the coins, right? The dollar coin and the 50-cent coin, and then you did that, and you're like, well, that's as far as I looked into it. But if you just went one coin further, the $2 is so tiny, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, oh, why did you stop?
Well, that was the point of it. I wanted people to, like, oh, you didn't even call out the two, because my friend said that. She's like, why didn't you bring out the $2 coin? I was like, yeah, that was the point, to say I didn't look at it.
And then the microphone thing as well.
Yeah, that's always
classic.
Fun.
And not even mentioning it for a while.
Yeah. It's a fun little bit to do.
And it didn't go too long. It was 5-7 minutes?
About 5-7, yeah. And you can tell, you can gauge pretty quickly. If the crowd is laughing at it, it's like, if they're laughing at it right away, it's like, oh, this is going to be fun. Yeah. If they're into this is silly, this is stupid, there's no meaning to it. So if they're laughing at it, it's like, ah, all right, they're going to be a lot of fun. I've done it on some shows where nobody laughed, and so I just, 3 minutes in, I got out of it, and then I was like, all right, let's move on. Clearly, it's going to be a lot of work.
So, and you didn't really do it at that show, but you do different accents.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is your normal accent now.
Yeah.
This is Californian.
This is, yeah.
But did you originally have a strong, like, Southern accent?
No, I don't think I ever did. I mean, if I did, I was unaware of it. I don't think...
You don't know your own accent.
Right, yeah. I don't think I ever did, though, have one.
Because you do a Southern accent.
Yeah. I mean, it's a combination of family members and people I grew up with, and... There's so many different versions of a Southern accent. Mm. If you just try one, you're probably on point. You know, there's so many different versions of one. But it's also not so much the accent as it is just the what you're saying and kind of like how you're saying it. Not specific to the accent. That is like sort of Southern culture. That it's kind of fun to do because having grown up in it, it's like, well, it's, you know, embedded into my psyche to know how to like tap into it. So it's kind of a fun, easy one to do, for sure, as far as, like, my voices go, which I just have, like, three, I guess, that I do, that I just started doing out of boredom because I didn't have any new material.
The German one?
And then doing them and them actually getting laughs and being funny kind of exploded into, I can do my old jokes as a German guy, and it's not like doing the old jokes because it's like a different person is doing them. But also it led to me to look at the jokes differently and be like, well... I wrote that joke the way I say it, but if this German guy says it, he can be a little more naive, or the crowd, you know, he can get away with a little bit more because the crowd suddenly just has this aura of like, well, we're not going to be so PC about it. He probably doesn't know.
He's a foreigner.
Exactly. And also, strangely enough, doing the Southern character, they almost feel the same way, where they're like, well, he's Southern. He probably doesn't know it's inappropriate to talk.
He doesn't know any better.
Exactly. And I play them kind of naive anyway, so the assumption isn't hard to get to.
And I read somewhere that you would, in a show, you would just change accent. Just mid-sentence, and just not even mention it, just keep going.
Yeah.
That is great.
Yeah.
It's fun to have no answers to, like,
yeah, if people, like, get confused or they get surprised by it or something, to me it's more fun to not, like, have a formatted thing or be like, oh, I should explain this, or like, to me, I don't understand why in comedy we feel the need that you need so much information or so many things have to be explained. I like it to be more like a, or feel more like a jam band kind of concert where it's like, well, they don't really know what they're doing, like jazz. Like they sure they know where the song starts, but they kind of, you know, put it together in the middle and they trying to figure it out, and then they get to the ending. And To me, it's kind of fun to do comedy that way. I think I just try to do the show that I would want to watch. So I like it when I see a comic do something and there's no explanation. I love it because I'm like, don't tell us. Let us sit.
Yeah.
And even telling us wouldn't even be, you know, it's not like it's rocket science. It's like, oh, he just shifted accents. Is it really so crazy that...
Yeah, but that's the best thing. Just don't mention it. Just do it and just keep going.
Yeah.
And look out at the, if you can see the faces, or there's the bright lights, you can't always see them. Oh, that's great. But you just reminded me of something else. Your comedy is like this mix of scripted, written stuff, mm-hmm. and improv stuff.
Yeah.
Which is probably my favorite type of comedy. Because you can go to a show and you can watch someone, I don't want to say that they're not as good, but someone can write a perfect show and sure. they can perform it 100 times.
Yeah.
And then it's like second nature to them and you just know that they're just going through the motions. Yeah. It's still a good show.
Yeah.
And they're good.
Yeah. But
that, and I appreciate that for the work that goes into that. And then you got improv, like I've gone and seen like Whose Line Is Anyway? And
yeah.
Wayne Brady does a show. And again, I appreciate that for what it is. It's great. You know, the as fast as their brains work, it's crazy. Right. But I've noticed I walk out of shows like that thinking, oh, it was funny, but, you know, the substance, what was there?
Yeah.
I walk out with like this sort of empty feeling. And so I've figured out I like this mix of both.
This hybrid, yeah.
Which is got stuff in it, but then you can go all around that and do whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, it's a little, I mean, I just started performing that way because it's a little of, I would get bored with myself.
Mm.
Also, like I said, I mean, I live and die by the philosophy of performing the show that you would want to watch. And so, for me, I think an audience likes it when they feel like this moment is genuine, you know? Mm. And I think they feel that way when there are clearly improvised moments. There's clearly things that are just responded to, or they can tell you just discovered a tangent and you're going off on it. Maybe it's not really a written out piece.
Mm.
But because of that, then if you can sort of work on the delivery of your written stuff, you can make that written stuff seem like maybe it's also just happening. And I mean, basically, every single comic goes up and tries to sell the illusion that they're just now thinking of this. And that's exactly what you should do because it makes an audience feel good. But, you know, the thing is, well, what if an audience member decides they want to see one more show before your weekend ends? And then they come back and now they're like, oh, well, it's all exactly verbatim, just like last time. It's like, well, now they're not sold on it. But they still could be. You could still give them that same illusion by not having a set order to things and not having and not doing things the exact same way every time, or not doing it the exact same length every time, you know?
Yeah, because, like, you can see a show.
It's not like I probably sound like I'm the guy who's like, and this is what I discovered. Like, it's not. It's not like anything that I thought of.
Yeah, you discovered it. Take the credit. You did it.
You see people perform who inspire you, and they you see that illusion, and you do go see them again, and you go, oh, it isn't the same. And I think in that moment, you just make that choice. Well, I want to do that too. I want to also, you know, make sure if someone ever felt so inclined to want to see a second show, they might go, oh, yeah, some of the material is the same, but it didn't feel the same. You know.
Yeah, there's a difference.
Yeah. And I mean, going the other route of very tight writing and being very scripted and by the book and A to B every single time you get on stage is, in my opinion, another great art form. It's another great style because, like you just said, it can be, there's a lot of substance to it and it can be, and there's a lot of meaning to it, and it can be very well written and very well performed. And to me, that is a show. That is what a show is like supposed to be. Like, I'm going to see a performance. I'm going to see a show. And then to me, what I like is like, well, what if people go for, they kind of go for a show or they go for a performance and it's kind of more of like an experience. That sounds more arrogant. I mean, for it to sound like, oh, when he comes to me, it's an experience. I don't mean it that way, but I don't think there's another word to describe like the difference of like, well, this is a show, this is a performance. This is also a show, but it's not the same type of show.
The thing that I like, though, is the, yes, it's a performance. I like, sometimes I like that part of it more than the comedy that's coming out of their mouth.
Yeah.
Like, I'll go and see someone, like, 3 times in a few months, and same material, but you can see, you know, they just change the timing a bit, they'll change some words.
The energy.
The art of, you know, like, fine-tuning it. I watch that, and I'm just like, even though I've heard the jokes now maybe 5 times, still just watching, you know, like the little tweaks they make, that's what I like.
Right.
That's good stuff to see. Like Ray, there's a guy called Ray Badron. He's an Australian comedian. And he was there that night.
Yeah, yeah. I met him on Tuesday. Yeah, he's great.
He does this thing. He repeats the lyrics to the Eurythmics song. Yeah.
Sweet Dreams.
Sweet Dreams are made of these. I've heard that too many times now. But it's still funny.
Yeah, and also in that voice and the delivery of it.
He still gets laughs. He still gets laughs.
It's great.
I don't know.
Yeah, he's
been doing that a long time. And it's still funny. I don't know how how many times I can see that, and I'm still laughing because the deadpan. Yeah,
I mean, I think that's what happens with some jokes, like when they're those kind of jokes that always still work. I mean, as a performer, it's hard to get rid of it because you're like, well, if people are laughing like that, you clearly still get joy from doing it. I mean, I've got jokes I've been doing for like 7 years now, and I honestly probably should cut them out of my act, but they get a laugh, and I still really like telling it, so I'm kind of like, well, why would I get rid of something and never do it again if it actually is still fun to do? Well, it's not like in this business there's like a shelf life on these things you can pick and choose.
That's it. But see, then you've got this thing where a musician can go out and do a tour and play all the old hits.
Yeah.
And some comedians can get away with doing that. Like Bill Cosby used to do that.
Right.
No comment about Bill Cosby, but he'd go out and he'd do all the things that people wanted to hear and tell the same stories.
Right.
Some comedians can do that.
I think there's a little bit of charisma to make it possible to do that. I mean, not so much as a... Maybe sure as a musician, but like a musician, you've got these songs and you write these songs and the show can be whatever the show is going to be, but people want to hear maybe a sprinkle of the new stuff. But even if you just put an album out, no one really wants to hear the whole album live. They want to hear the last album.
They want to hear the hits.
But with comedy, it's a little bit different where in stand-up, we don't really have anything like hits where someone goes, you know, I mean, if Jim Gaffigan's at a show and decides suddenly he's going to do his whole Hot Pocket thing, I mean, the crowd's going to go absolutely apeshit.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, like, you know, if he was doing that over and over and over again, I know that it would drive him crazy.
Yeah.
And if it's driving him crazy, that probably comes through in the performance of it, and the crowd's right. Like, oh, yeah, maybe we should be... We probably get a better show if we watch him perform the things he's excited about, you know, joking about.
But Akmal, he's an Australian comedian. He's a funny guy.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the last quarter of the show, or not even the last quarter, the last 15% of the show, he's like, any questions, like anything, any comments, how am I going? And someone pretty much always asks him to tell this story about Rockhampton, because he went to Rockhampton and there was an incident.
Yeah.
And it's a hilarious story. And he stopped telling it. And so now every time it gets to that part of the show, everyone's like, Rockhampton!
Oh, yeah.
Tell us the Rockhampton story.
Of course,
and it's still hilarious every time he does it. And I don't think he's sick of telling that story.
Yeah, that's what I think. Story. If you're not sick of it, you should just keep doing it. But I don't know, I feel like my explanation there about music and going to see a band or going to see a comic, like, I don't even know if it made sense to me as I said it. But you know what I mean. Like, it's a different experience when you go see...
If you see a comic,
you're like, God, this is the exact same show I saw last year.
Yeah.
You're not going to be happy about it. But if you went and you said, half the show's what I saw last year, you might not be that upset. You might be like, oh, it was kind of good. I heard some of the jokes from last year that I kind of wanted to hear again, but then I got to hear a whole other 30 minutes of brand new stuff. Like, and then it looks actually like how a band would play, where they're like, yeah, we're going to go half new, half old.
Yeah. Like, the night after I saw you, I went and saw Ronnie Cheng at Enmore Theatre.
Yeah.
And I went in, I'm like, oh, I reckon maybe 30% I've heard before because I've seen him a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And it was maybe 30, 35%, which is fine.
That's, yeah.
Because the stuff that he says is still hilarious.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
No, I think 30, I think that, I mean, fuck, 50-50 for me is great. 50-50. My writing is very slow. I'm not, it takes me a long time to have a new chunk of anything new.
So when you write, have you written for TV or you were just the actor?
Not really. Yeah, just in Gravel. I mean, the only writing I did, I wouldn't even really technically say that I was a writer on the show, but pre-production of season one, I was in the writer's room making whatever small contributions I could make, which was very little. I didn't know what I was doing. I'd never been in the writer's room. Mm. So yeah, I would in no way categorize myself as a writer. Definitely more performer than writer. And then with my stand-up, I mean, I obviously do all of it, but that's probably a big reason why it takes a longer for me to have a new hour together, because I'm just not very prolific with it.
I saw your explanation for how do you write, and it was like, I go so smoke some pot and then I walk around.
Yeah. I mean, that's where most of it comes from, or it comes from on stage, like discovering something on stage where I'll be like, oh, that can grow into something. I mean, it's very... I feel like all writing, no matter what, is organic, and that word's greatly overused these days, but I mean, organic in the sense that maybe I stumble on something on stage, and I try to talk about it as long as I can on stage, and maybe out of that...
Exploring,
maybe there's two big moments that got a big laugh, and so those would be what I keep. And what I'm saying right now is I probably the way most people actually write their comedy, but you know, then I'll walk away with those two things and do them next time, but only do those two things. And you know, I might find the very next time that it's actually just that crowd and that stumbling on it for a first time revelation that's what got the energy up, and that's what made the joke really funny. Whereas, like, you know, trying it out again, maybe the magic isn't there anymore, and then you're like, then you kind of step back and you, well, how funny do I think this premise is anyways? Like, do I want to make the effort with this kind of thing? So
is it worth it? Is it worth the time?
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's kind of discovering things and going, oh, that's funny, and then working on it. I'm not good at sitting down going, all right, I'm going to sit here for an hour
sit
and I'm
actually
write. Yeah, I don't, I'm not good at that.
Do you record the shows? I read somewhere you used to record them and then you stopped. And
I record on my phone, the audio. So I always have the audio in case I stumble on something and can't remember what it is.
And you can go back.
And go back and check it out and figure out how I said it. Or if there's an old bit and I tried it a new way, I'd be like, all right, what were the adjustments that I made to it so I can keep that, you know, as is? Because maybe it got a bigger laugh, or it sharpened it up a bit. Better tag or something maybe came out of it.
So like with stand-up comedy, when you're writing, it's something that you, the only way you can do it is to do it.
Yeah.
You can sit there and write a whole page of stuff.
Yeah.
But unless you get out there on the stage and do it, you don't know if they're going to laugh. You might think it's the funniest thing in the world.
Right.
And everyone's just like, yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. I think that's what I really like about it. It's kind of the joy and pain of it all at the same time, is that you have to just go. And it's, I mean, when you're trying to work on a new hour, it's the most painful, because you might have to endure going up quite a bit and failing. And it definitely affects your ego, especially when you've proven to yourself that you are funny, and you've proven to other comics, and you've proven to other audiences you're very funny, and you're like, well, now for the next month, or maybe even longer, I'm going to look like I've never even fucking done this before, because I have no idea if these premises are funny, or if these punchlines and the direction I'm going is funny.
I like those shows, though. I've been to a few of those. Atmal, I just said before, he did a show probably about 3 or 4 months ago. And I can't remember, it was just some sort of rehearsal, I can't remember what he called it, something. And it was just him getting up there going, oh, what about this, is this funny?
Yeah.
And he'd just do it, and then we'd laugh, or we wouldn't laugh.
Right.
And he'd like, okay, I'm not keeping
that. It's very, I mean, that process, I mean, having a show like that where you can just be that sort of...
And he's still paying, he's still getting money, he's still working.
Right, yeah. Being that upfront about it and drilling through it is actually a great way to do it. It's very liberating, I'm sure, to kind of be like, all right, well, we're going to find out right now about these ideas, and then, you know...
You're going to decide if this is going to be the show or not.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, it's also kind of weightlifting for your own charisma there, too, because you're like, well, hopefully my personality can maintain the interest, because I don't know if my topics are going to maintain the laughs.
Yeah. So what's happening next? What are you doing now? You got one more night.
You're doing the gala. The gala.
Tuesday night.
Yeah. Tuesday night gala at the Enmore Theater, and then head back to Los Angeles on... Wednesday. I mean, for me at this point, I'm trying to talk with some people that are putting some pilots together and see if they're interested in me, maybe audition and see if I'm the guy they might be looking for those, and also trying to kind of pitch my own TV show ideas. So it's kind of an interesting time. It's I'd love to have a job in terms of acting.
Yeah.
But I kind of like that this kind of period right now gives me time to figure out, well, what is an idea that I would go forward with, and how would I, in what way would I try to get it sold, and, you know, kind of see, you know, if people are interested in you having a show, your own show.
Would you be willing to shave the beard?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for anything, I think I would definitely do it. I'm not married to it. I personally prefer it. I like my beard, but... Yeah, if I got something that wanted me to shave the beard or do anything, I would basically do it. If I felt like it was worth it, for sure. If I felt like it made sense to a character to not have a beard. You know, some people just want you to look a certain way and they don't really have a reason for it. In that world, you're kind of like, well, no, then I don't want to shave it. Yeah.
So you've got an idea. It's coming. It's forming for your own show.
Right.
You're the main guy.
Yeah.
In the show.
Yes.
You're not going to write a show for someone else.
I wouldn't be opposed to that. I wouldn't be opposed to just selling an idea if it was something that I wasn't interested in trying to be in. But I mean, honestly, if I had an idea and someone thought it was great, but they didn't think it was me, if they thought, well, we like this idea, but we think someone else should be in it, I would have no... I mean, it would depend on which idea it was, but I don't think I'd have any qualms about it. I mean, at this stage in my career, getting to do anything seems like a blessing in itself. Like, what a crazy job to have. But certainly, as I go forward in my career, some goals of mine are, like you said before, like maybe directing one day, like being more of a disciplined writer who actually can sit and write a pilot or write a feature and not require someone else to have to be there holding their hand through it, which is currently what I have to have because I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I was at a point where I had a show idea and just to sell it and be like, there, I created that idea, I created that show and we sold it and put it out there and I have nothing to do with it at this point, like, I'm not at all opposed to that. Yeah. It's part of the business, you know. It's kind of fun being creative and being able to make money and make art off of your creativity. It's kind of to be an artist. It's kind of trippy. I mean, it's kind of a cool job.
It's good when you can get paid for it too.
Yeah, I mean, if you're getting paid to do it, something that you really love and are capable of doing. Well, I mean, that's as close to the American dream as you're gonna get.
It is. It is. So if you wrote a show, because that's the thing, like you could write a show and sell that show.
Yeah.
And then you're done.
Yeah.
You get paid.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
It just says created by.
Yeah, this I mean, guy. You're also hoping that it's. I mean, and also you may get the opportunity to like work on the show, which I would also be. I mean, I'd probably be willing at this point to do most things because I haven't had a chance to find the things I don't want to do. You know, it's kind of like doing comedy, like. There are plenty of clubs I've now played
and you don't in want the to United go back
States
to.
That I'll never go back to. It wouldn't even matter how much money they offered. There's no joy in it.
Because of the club or the people? Or
The audiences or how the club... you know, certain clubs that are just interested in selling booze and food and they don't really have an opinion on comedy or what's funny and you can tell that who they do like is hacky comedians, there's a good chance that's the audience that they bring in. I mean, that's why there's... I mean, that in my opinion is why, you know, some cities have a pretty strong independent comedy scene because local comics don't necessarily vibe with a club like that. So they kind of branch out and do their own thing. And that leads to comics, you know, having less of a standard style of performance, which leads to what people call alternative comedy, which is really an interesting title. Some people hate alternative comedy, even though it's not even really a thing.
Yeah.
It means you hate, you know, oh, I hate alternative comedy. Do you, or do you just hate what that person did just now?
Yeah.
I think some comics hate that, you know, they hate that there isn't a definition as to what's funny. Something's either funny and entertaining, or it's not funny and entertaining, and yet there's some people who want. I don't know how I got into this rant, but you know, then there's some people.
That's what this show is about.
Comedy should be done this specific kind of way. It's like, well, what would music be like if that's what people said about music? No, music has to be these instruments, and it has to be this type of sound. Yeah. Like, well, then we, you know, it's a weird way to look at art for sure. I think from some people's standpoint, but going back to my original point. You know, there's clubs that I will never play again because there was no joy in it. There was nothing fun about it. I could find myself the more that I'm doing in television, if I'm lucky enough to do more in the acting world, as I go, I'll probably be like, oh, I really decided I hate doing that type of thing. Or I hate trying to be on, or I hate that particular job. You know, I've never had to produce anything in my life. I could find out in the future, if I'm lucky enough, that it's a job I absolutely adore. Or I could also find out I fucking hate it. But you know, at this point, that's why I'm saying I'm willing to kind of do everything because I really haven't done much of anything.
Because, you know, sitting in a writer's room, it's going to be pretty different to writing your own stand-up.
Yeah. I mean, if it's your own TV show.
Eight other people there.
Yeah, if it's your own show. See, that's the thing. I've only been in the room where it wasn't my show. I was just on it, and I could contribute, you know, some ideas, and I could learn how to contribute. That's more what I was in there to do, is kind of learn how, you know, Jeff Astroff was the showrunner. Mm-hmm. So I got to see specifically how a guy like him runs a room. I got to see how other writers, you know, come together and gel when they just got thrown together and kind of see how that world works from a very distant, peripheral. Like, I was... I was not involved enough to grow in that type of field because I was just kind of in and out, and then we started shooting and I didn't go back.
But it looked interesting though?
It looked very interesting. But if I had my own TV show and I was in a writer's room, because I know what the show is and I know the direction I want it to go, my contribution would be vastly different. Because, you know, this show, I was on it, but we were also shooting season one, and I didn't really totally know what the show was going to be. I mean, neither did the writers. You know, the showrunner has his vision, and the, you know, Bill Lawrence, the creator, and he knew, you know, what he wanted it to kind of look like. So if I was stepping into that role, and I knew exactly what I wanted the show to be, I imagine my contribution in the writer's room would be quite a bit.
Mm.
And I would know, like, when an idea came up that I didn't like, if I didn't think it fit into the formula, it would be easier for me to say, no, that's not the direction we're going.
Because if you're the boss, you've got a bunch of other people. It's like, don't like that, don't like that.
Yeah. You can't really do it when you're just the one of the employees, because you're honestly like, well, I don't know if we like that. Maybe we do.
So your idea for your own show, do you see that as, like, a standard sitcom or something like Louis with no audience?
Kind of both.
If you could get exactly what you wanted.
I don't know if I have one that I particularly like. I know that it's probably good to have one of each idea. So at this point, I have an idea for both. One that isn't necessarily a show like Louis, where, I mean, I wouldn't be playing a character that was a stand-up comedian in either of them. But multicam sitcom. I definitely have an idea for, and I did like that format. I mean, getting to do Ground Floor was eye-opening. It's not a format I would have ever chosen to do, but after having done it, I was like, I like the hours, I like the style of performance, I like that it's, you know, most very joke-heavy, driven by jokes, you know, and not so much story. I mean, we had, you know, a lot of story on Ground Floor, but I like that jokes made the biggest difference. A single-camera show, I like that you can be a little more dramatic, and the jokes can be different because now the jokes can be very visual through the editing process. You know, not that you can't do that with a multicam, but multicam is more like you're filming a play.
Yeah.
You know, whereas
and
like single cam,
blocking and all those.
Yeah, and it's kind of set in its way. Whereas like a single cam, it's in my opinion, it's like using a different canvas to paint on for sure. You can do different things with it. Each of them has their own pros and cons.
Is LPM a thing?
What is that?
Laughs per minute.
Not in my reality. I don't think so.
When they're in that writing room, you know, if they go like 10 seconds, two, three lines without a joke, it's like, where's the joke? What?
I mean, I think you can just tell by pattern and rhythm. I mean, that's what that's why I go back to like jazz on it. Like, it's not defined, but you know, if there's a sudden lull or it's something else is happening, or you're doing a drum solo, which is really upbeat, and then all of a sudden he's not really doing much at a very slow pace, it's like you look at it and go, well, now it's not music. It's like, no, it's still there. You just it doesn't come at you the same way. And I think, you know, for the sake of stand-up comedy, I think laughs per minute is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. And anyone and by anyone I mean basically people who decide specials and decide producers and people who think they understand stand-up comedy, those people, LPMs is something in their universe, and it's only because they're too dumb to know that that's a ridiculous idea. It's the dumbest thing to count on. For television, sure, I could see someone writing a script and being like, well, there's a big lull here, and we need to maybe get some jokes in there. And it's like, yeah, you know, being a different format, laughs per minute, I can see being sort of a necessary thing. I mean, especially for a multi-camera sitcom. You know, if you have a long lull where no one's really laughing, it kind of changes what the show actually is, you know. Does it suddenly become dramatic, or is it just uninteresting altogether?
Yeah, just turn into a drama. Like, exactly, like changing accent, just go straight drama in the middle
of
the show.
Yeah, just suddenly go drama.
You could do that. Right. You could do that in your show. It could be hilarious. The first 10 minutes, just all laughs, and then just drama the
and
rest
then
of
like
the show.
A, like a, just a really hardcore murder.
right at the end.
Yeah, very graphic.
Blood everywhere.
First ever NC-17 multi-camera sitcom.
See? You got some ideas now.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be good. So, you've been here a week? More than a week?
A week. A week, exactly, yeah.
So, what do you think so far? You went to Featherdale Wildlife Park.
Yeah, it was fun. Which is great. Really great. It was cool. I mean, I'm not like the biggest fan of zoos. Anyways, you kind of walk around and you think all the animals are miserable.
Yeah.
It was kind of interesting, you know, to see some birds that weren't caged to they weren't leaving. Yeah. You know, they clearly wanted to stay.
Yeah, they hung around.
Yeah, it's some of the birds that were caged. I mean, there were some eagles that were caged, and that felt a little ridiculous. Clearly, they don't want to be confined to a tight space. And birds that are caged just always feels very strange. But it was cool seeing that a lot of the animals are just kind of free roaming for the most part.
Yeah. That's why Feathered Owl's great. Like, anyone who comes here. Because there is one, like, around Darling Harbour somewhere.
Yeah, like
Wildlife Park. Or there's Taronga, a proper zoo. But you go to Feathered Owl, you can just walk in. There's kangaroos and wallabies right there.
Yeah,
you can hold the koala.
Yeah, having pet a koala while it was eating and kind of petting a kangaroo, like, pretty bizarre. Mm. I mean, I don't like the confinement of any animals, but I did get the sense that this particular place, the animals didn't seem miserable. They seemed like, yeah, we don't mind being here.
Yeah, I don't like the zoo that much.
Yeah.
But this one's okay.
It was cool, and I like the setup. I like how it's kind of a maze that you can walk through. It was kind of laid out very interestingly.
So, have you got a plan to come back? Are you going to come back next year for the festival?
Yeah, I'd like to. I'd like to try to do it. My wife and I are having a baby in July.
Ooh,
She's having it. I'll be there to watch. But yeah, in July we're having a baby, and that's going to decide a lot of things for us. But coming back, I mean, you know, here it is May. The baby would almost be 1 year old. It would kind of be fun to try to bring both of them, if possible. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a possibility, but it would be interesting. We have family in Macau, in China, so if it was something that we could work out to kind of, you know, maybe do a show in Hawaii, then do some shows in Australia, then go to China and be gone for a little while, that could be fun. It's hard to... That's the kind of strange balance of doing stand-up, you know. If someone says, hey, you can come to Sydney, you can do Melbourne, you can do Sydney, you can do some road gigs in between, you can really make a month or more out of it, it's very exciting. But being at this point where I'm at in acting now, it's kind of like, well, if I have an acting job, I probably can't go. But then also, not having an acting job means... Well, what if something pops up while you're gone?
Yeah.
So with stand-up, you know, before I used to just go away for, you know, 3 months at a time and just go on the road and do stand-up. And my wife, luckily for me, was okay with that. Now that there's acting and a bigger family, it's kind of like, well, now you can kind of go do stand-up, but then you kind of need to come back. Like here, I'm here for 10 days. That honestly feels like the limit for sure.
Yeah, that's the thing. You can't plan when,
But, being able to travel with him would be fantastic. I mean, Gaffigan goes on the road with his five kids and wife.
They come with him.
They go with him and do the road. And, I mean, everyone would agree, like, he and I are probably in the same boat popularity-wise, so it makes sense that I would
try to bring my family. Gaffigan. I liked it when he did the Late Show. He filled in after Craig left.
There were
some great shows. He'd like bring the kids out and do some skit.
Yeah, they like intro'd him and stuff. Yeah, he's fantastic. He's so funny, naturally funny, and has that charisma that you're just attracted to.
And Bill Burr, you mentioned Bill Burr before. I only saw Bill Burr for the first time he came here.
Oh, okay.
I think in the start of this year or the end of last year.
Yeah.
And it was in the Opera House. It was like in the main room. And I'd never seen him before, but I'd seen video. I've never seen him live, though.
Right.
And it was great.
Yeah.
Oh.
Maybe the best for me right now to watch is him. There's something about... It's super smart. It's edgy. Mm. It's saying something. It's got a message to it. It's great commentary politically and socially. And I mean, all that is what I live for. But also, he can be silly, too. And all that is the recipe of what I'm attracted to with comedy.
The thing, he did this thing, I don't know if he still does it, it's about domestic violence. And it's like, well, yeah, it's bad, but, you know, she had to have caused it somehow.
Right.
And just the way it was all set up, it made you think, yeah, maybe she was a total bitch, and she deserved it. And the way he crafted it was just so good.
Yeah.
I listened to that a few, and my wife didn't like it.
Of course, yeah.
She didn't get it. But I was trying to explain to her, and I'm like, just forget it. You're not going to understand.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he makes the jokes about those serious things, and it, you know, some key words get said, and people get tense, and then on the back end, you know, he makes kind of a point about it. I don't think I know the particular bit you're talking about, but, you know, on the back end, he makes a point, makes you go, all right, yeah, when people say, oh, it's something that you shouldn't laugh at, it's like, well... Maybe you can laugh at it if there's a point to it that makes you go, oh, you know, maybe he's right about something, you know.
And it did. It made me think, yeah,
Yeah.
Which is something I didn't think I would think, but then I thought, well, yeah, of course.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like Doug Stanhope is probably one of the best at that, you know, saying something very controversial, very aggressive, and then, you know, you're kind of like, whoa, and then he backs it up completely, and you're like, oh, shit, he's made me look at that in a whole new light.
Mm. What do you think about David Letterman
going?
I think, you think it's time? Oh, you can't say that?
I mean, it's been forever. I don't know. I think it's been 33 years, I think. I mean, I'll
I think he's had enough.
Come to an end, and I'm sure he's ready to move on. He's got a young son that he wants to probably spend some time with.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, he's great. He's absolutely fantastic. It'll be interesting to see what Colbert does. I'm very curious.
I'll be interested to see him not in character and see who he is, because I don't know who he is.
Yeah.
I've never seen him outside, you know, Colbert
Report. He's really smart. I think he's brilliantly funny. And I think he'll have the same type of off-center comedy that Letterman, you know, the bar that Letterman set. I think Colbert will come in and he'll have a new take on it, but I think he'll have the same sort of interest in keeping it different.
Yeah.
Not making it just another late-night show. I mean, even though Letterman had just a, you know, your typical run-of-the-mill late-night show, it wasn't a typical run-of-the-mill late-night show. He was weird and he was cool with weird stuff, and he was fine with things that didn't necessarily work and being relaxed. And I mean, the way that he interviewed people was so much more interesting than the way most late night hosts interview people. It seems very forced and pretending to think that this person's a great genius. And David Letterman just sat there and he made that decision in the moment if he thought that person was a great genius or not.
It was so funny because they always come out and it's like, oh, I heard you went on holidays recently. Tell me that story. And it's just all set up. And
they got a movie coming out. Yeah.
But Dave was so funny because you could just see on his face, he's like some new little pop singer. He's just like, I do not care at all.
Right.
I mean, he didn't have to say it. You could just see his face.
Right.
But it was
when he had Paris Hilton on, I mean, it was fucking incredible to not care the way he didn't care.
That was great.
Is that kind of your favorite for like late night shows?
Well, we don't really get that much.
I guess
here.
It would be different. Yeah,
they really only like there's no Australian one at all.
Oh, okay.
There's nothing.
Oh, that's interesting. It seems like there would be.
And I've always thought I could be that guy. I could be the one to start.
I mean, it's such a fun and not that it has to be what those shows are, the same format as those shows in the state, but like, you know, I feel like a late night kind of interview talk show is just kind of interesting. You know, it seems like you don't have to play by the rules the same way.
No, you could do whatever you wanted. There was a guy, Steve Vizard, who pretty much copied Letterman.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. He did it, it was like early 90s. He did it for maybe 3 or 4 years and then it just ended.
Okay.
But I think the main reason they give these days is there's just not enough people to interview down here.
Okay, yeah.
But there is. There's lots of Australian actors and musicians. You could do it, but I don't know.
Well, they also don't have to be celebrities either. I think that's
they can be anyone. Unfortunate like Craig part Ferguson used to have like writers and authors and anybody on there.
Yeah. And that I mean, anyone fun. Interesting. I mean, what's his name? It's such a difficult last name. He's a Greek out of Canada. He had a show where it wasn't necessarily had to be funny, but it was just him one-on-one talking to people. And I mean, it could be funny, and he was a funny guy, but he also just kind of interviewed people, and it was just interesting. It was interesting to watch, you know. And they weren't always like famous.
Well, that's what I hope this is.
Yeah, that's what I'm
just talking.
Well, currently.
But then, have you seen James Corden doing the late, what was?
Right,
the late show.
Right.
Late show.
Yeah, how's it been?
It's okay.
I don't really watch a lot of
He's taken that format, the UK format, where they get all three on the couch at the same time.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if I like it or not.
Okay.
I mean, you get
sort
more interaction.
Yeah.
Just like that. You get more interaction between them, but I always feel like you just don't get enough from each person.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
But he's doing okay. His ratings are pretty good, I think.
Yeah. But even that, that's a leap that I like. You know, if it's like, oh, we're going to bring all the guests out at once, it's like, all right, well, at least you're trying something. It's not obviously not different because it's the UK kind of way of doing it, but it's like.
But for America,
here it is different, and you know, thank God you're like, well, let's try this other way and see if that catches on. Because I would be more inclined as a viewer to want to see that. If I were ever a guest, I would prefer that. I'd be like, yeah, talk about it at the same time. It almost seems to alleviate the pressure of what are we talking about, you know?
You got to have all your stories ready.
Exactly. Have your stories ready and your cues ready. Like the other way, it seems like, well, it's a little more haphazard. Kind of come in when you come in, you know? If you got something funny to say, get it in there.
Yeah, it seems better that way. But anyway, what about writing for a comedy, or like a late night show? I mean, is that any different from a sitcom? I mean, it'd be a different style of writing, but it's all just 10 writers in a room.
Yeah, it's definitely a different style of writing, and definitely what is probably required of you. Not probably, it's definitely different what's required of you from doing a regular TV show, because, you know, you're not breaking story or anything. You're just coming up with different segments. You're coming up with different jokes for those segments. You're writing monologue jokes.
A recent study has shown.
Yeah, I mean, I there's a lot of very funny people that write on Conan. They're fantastic. They're a great group of writers. They're all very funny. A lot of them, I'd say probably the majority of them, do stand-up.
Yeah.
And are just great. I don't think it's anything that I would like to do, because I don't even write that often for myself.
Yeah.
So if I was thrown into a job like that, I would probably become the guy that's the contributing the least, and they would all fucking start to hate me.
And you don't want to be doing something which you liked, and then you, hate it.
And then you start to hate it. Which, I mean, that happens to a lot of comedians that become writers. I would never be opposed to the idea of hosting a late night show. I would never be the person chosen to do that in any circumstances. Mm. Certainly not today.
You could
in 5 or 10 years, things could be different. But
you could fill in for Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, I mean, if I ever
some
had
people
my
might
own,
know the difference.
If I ever had like that kind of opportunity, that's the only way that I would have a show like that, is if I created it and I said, I'm going to be a late night show, and it's going to be on IFC or something. Mm. Obviously, it wouldn't be on the major networks. But yeah, I would never be opposed to that. It does look like a very fun, kind of interesting job. Definitely has that Groundhog Day element to it as far as jobs go, but it also does look, you know, it looks really fun.
That'd be the thing, yeah, trying not to get sick of it.
Yeah.
Having the same, you know, this guest come out and you ask him questions, and that's always how it's going to end up. You just have to keep having ideas. What can I do? What can I do next?
Yeah.
And then then you'd start to hate that as well.
And you get to a point where you've kind of done it all. I mean, Letterman kind of did it all.
Mm.
That's why I feel like he's kind of chosen this. He's like, oh, I've kind of seen it, and I've kind of done it, so what else am I supposed to do?
But he's like the last one, really. Like,
yeah.
Leno's gone. Someone else is gone.
Well, Ferguson's now gone.
Oh, Craig Ferguson, yeah.
Oh,
I love Craig Ferguson. His show was great.
Yeah.
I watched that. All we really got here was Letterman and Craig Ferguson.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Right.
But, you know, you can still obtain shows other ways and see Conan and other shows, but Craig Ferguson.
Yeah, Conan will now be
he's the headmaster.
Longest running one,
yeah,
Conan for sure.
The elder
statesman. Yeah, which is strange. I mean, it was like just yesterday he was not.
He was late night.
Yeah.
Doing all that crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Oh. And, talk about your albums. You've got two or three albums out.
Two albums
One's on the Jack Black, White.
Jack White. One of them is called Dilation. It's on iTunes and Amazon. And then one is called Rory Scovel Live at Third Man Records. And that's maybe in your local record store. I doubt it. It's vinyl only. So maybe it's in your record store. But if it isn't, it is definitely at thirdmanrecords.com. Jack White's label. It is definitely there.
Go and find it.
For ordering. And then, hopefully I'll have a special out in a few months.
TV? Audio? Video?
Hopefully something like Netflix or something online. Oh, yeah, it'll be video, yeah.
Oh, there we go.
Something like Netflix or something online. Some kind of way to view it whenever you want to type option.
Yeah, streaming. That's what it's all about. It's all about the streaming now.
Yeah, it's more convenient.
Well, it was great to talk to you. All done. Nice.
Yeah.
We've done an hour.
We did it. We created an hour.
Episode 3. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on, man.
Rory Scovel. Go and find him on YouTube. Watch stuff. Okay, that's the end.
Cool.
Here's some ridiculous theme music.